From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the second day of August 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Atchison, Kansas. A bit later in the program, we'll look at the cash grain market. And along the way today, we'll hear about the agricultural news, including how a federal judge is expected to decide if companies in New Mexico and Iowa can open slaughtering plants for horses. A French court, by the way, has also overturned a ban on a Monsanto brand of biotech corn, and the International Grains Council is forecasting a smaller world corn harvest. Dave Dickey will have all the details. As we close out our half hour together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast. Mike Tenora of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago will be here. As we finish up this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, let's check the numbers in Chicago as they finished up for a Friday afternoon. Futures in the corn pit were, for the day, a bit lower, as was the wheat, at least in the deferred months, July of next year, by the way, and the 2014 soft red down 3/4 at 682. The nearby at 660.5 was up 2.5. The corn pit again lower for the day, down 11.5 cents in the September at $4.76, December at 463.75, 3.25 lower. And the March corn futures at 476.5, down 3.25. May contract 484.25, 3.25 lower. And July corn down 3 cents at $4.90.25. December of 2014 at 494.5, down 3.5 cents. August soybeans for the day, 26.75 cents the loss, $13.31 the settlement price for the lead option. September futures now at 12.12¾, down 21.5. And your new crop November beans at $11.81.5, down 11 cents. January futures on a Friday settled at $11.87¼, 10¾ lower. The March contract down 10¾ as well. It finished at $11.90, and November of 2014 at $11.67¼, down 11¾ cents. Bean meal futures were off 13.30. Bean oil down 11 cents. Mercantile exchange August feeder cattle down 15 at 120.65. October at 124.47½, 2.5 cents lower. August feeders at 153.72½ are up 2.5, and the August lean hogs at $99.25, 82.5 cents higher. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the day, September contract, $168.68, down $1.21 on the day. The RBOB gasoline or wholesale price at $2.99, that's just about 3.8 cents lower, and ethanol trading at $2.29, up 0.1 cents higher for the day. Natural gas at $3.34.07, that's down 4 cents. Diesel fuel at $3.06.08, 2.8 cents lower, and the gold futures at $1,310.20 an ounce, 50 cents lower on the day. The U.S. dollar at 81.9 is down 0.42 at this hour. Hey, have you taken WILL with you lately on your smartphone? If you have a iPhone, an iPad, an Android device, just head over to the App Store or Google Play and search for Will Radio. The new WILL app is free. It allows you to stream our AM and FM stations, listen to past episodes of your favorite programs on demand, and so much more. You can find them in the App Store or at Google Play. It's all part of the service that comes to you from WILL and Illinois Public Media. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. And we should see a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly sunny otherwise, a high of 84 degrees. Showers and thunderstorms continue into the evening, and those will come mostly after 8 tonight. It'll be cloudy and 66 with a southwest wind at 3 to 8. 60% chance of rainfall then. Saturday during the day, showers and thunderstorms are likely. Those mainly before 8 in the morning, mostly cloudy otherwise, a high of 79 degrees. And then Saturday evening, partly cloudy and a low of 58. Sunny skies on Sunday and a high near 78. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Mike Tenora.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, on this Friday afternoon, it is the second day of August. Time to check the futures markets from the great state of Kansas and Atchison. On the phone line with us, Mike Zuzalo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
You know, the market continues to break just a bit for both corn and soybeans. Kind of rough day today in Chicago if you wanted things to go higher. What was behind the move lower?
I think today specifically was a meal-led decline, Todd. We saw a very big break in the August meal contract, that market in delivery, even though we saw zero deliveries. We also saw some weakening basis at midday for the spot meal. Demand side seems to be pulling away in the last week now that we're in delivery. And we essentially saw the August meal with almost a $31 a ton range, a 7% move today between the high and the low. So with that August meal going almost 4%, 3 to 4% lower on the close, I think that triggered the August beans, which in turn triggered the September corn to go lower. And I think that's probably the biggest reasons why we saw the bear spread really kick in for both the beans and the corn.
As you mentioned, there was a pretty wide range today for the bean meal from top to bottom. Why did they push it higher to begin with, and what was it that managed to take things lower? Is it just somebody got caught as we moved through the process, or what happened, do you think?
I do think in the meal, the talk in Chicago was the demand didn't show up. I think the talk in the Chicago was that while the wheat was playing more of a demand market, not just today, but also for most of the week, the talk in Chicago continues to be the beans and the corn feeling more supply and weather pressure. And specifically this morning, it seemed as though the rainfall overnight missed areas that were supposed to get rain. That triggered the higher bean market opening, with November being the key market going higher. And then by midday, colleagues in Chicago were telling me that with rain showing up in northwestern Iowa, that pulled all the longs out of the beans, and the selling began at that point.
No, it's always a long time from midsummer to harvest, maybe a bit longer this year than usual. What do you see in the way of prospects for a move higher?
I think the prospects have improved this week because I don't think that the rain models and the forecasts matched up with what we actually got. The government came out with their updated drought assessment. We increased our abnormally dry conditions in the state of Iowa last week by 7%. We're now at over 70% abnormally dry for that state. Minnesota also increased, and you and I talked about not just the meal deliveries, but also what we would be looking for in terms of crop conditions on Monday when we spoke a week ago, and those crop conditions went lower in some key states. And so when I look at 13.5 million acres harvested in Iowa, of 89 million total, that's 15% of the total acreage. You throw in there Illinois, Nebraska, and Minnesota, you're talking about 43.5 million acres. That's about 50% of the crop, I think, actually went downhill this week. And some of the Illinois clients that I spoke with, especially in north central Illinois, were really looking for some rains and so far haven't gotten those rains. And so I think, generally speaking, when I look at the weather maps, when I look at the July precip totals versus the five-year mean, when I look at the drought monitor, and probably most importantly to the near term is when you see the cash basis for corn jumping today like it did, and we've essentially in some locations gotten back about half the losses from last week when it comes to spot basis for corn, you're back to a $6.50 cash price in corn right now. So you've got a $2 disparity essentially between corn right now and corn in October. And I sit and listen to my clients tell me they're not going to have hardly any corn ready to shell by the time they get to September, that it's going to be a later crop, it's going to be October, and with all the fungicide applied probably even into mid-October before you can really put new crop supplies on the market. So I think on a week-by-week basis, although the charts look pretty torn up at this point, I think the fundamentals have actually gotten better in terms of a price recovery.
So do you think that that means, Mike, that there's an opportunity for new crop to be pulled higher by old crop and a pricing opportunity then? Or is it just, in your mind, the laying of the groundwork for a larger move higher?
No, I think it's the former. I think it's the first, because there's a very large gap on the daily continuation corn chart, Todd, and you fill that gap around the 625, 650, 670 area, and it would make sense to me that you would need to pull up the new crop. The early new crop corn, I think, is way too cheap, and I think this is why the end users are coming in and bringing back the basis so dramatically, not just because futures has fallen, but I think they see the writing on the wall. There's not going to be a lot of new crop corn coming. Ethanol production went down pretty substantially. That, I think, is a lot like the NOPA crush, where you just don't have the corn out there. We're still running at about 32% less corn supplies on our weekly stocks report than we had a year ago. So I do think that the cash market and the spreads do come in. That was probably the most disturbing thing to me on the market today, was why the September corn had to fall and fell so hard against what the cash market and the spot basis was doing, and that's where I lay it at the feet of the meal market. I think essentially the corn market, that's had its weather premium taken out. Beans had began to see their weather premium taken out this week, and so the corn is kind of held hostage by the beans at this point.
Have we reached the bottom side then for the corn?
I think we will by the time we get to the September delivery. I think that's where everything comes back together. As much like the August meal delivery, the September delivery and the September corn going into the cash contract, get us past the August report, have the biggest crop, I think, that we could get based, built into the price, already priced in by the time we get to September delivery.
All right. And so somewhere between now and then, we reach a low, and then we run out of corn, old crop probably, at some point, and that's where we get the bite higher, right?
Yeah, I think this is where maybe the wheat is turning the corner, with France about 30% harvested and still maybe under some harvest pressure and supply pressure. Maybe we saw a week this week of a higher wheat close, that the demand side starting to come back in the wheat. I think 30, 45 days down the road, after we get past the weather supply side bearishness on the row crops, maybe they start to look at the good weekly export sales and the good interior demand and the ethanol crush as well in the futures market. This is where we're back to a cash futures disconnect, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm. Did you see that the International Grains Council cut the world corn market today?
I did.
Yeah. So what did you think of that?
I think that's fine as far as the world numbers go. I think they're probably injecting mostly increased U.S. supplies into those world numbers. I think this is where it goes back to. In May of this year, we saw the USDA with a global wheat ending stock number of 180 million tons. We've trimmed that to 172. That's about 8 million tons, or about 290 million bushels, or about a 4.5% cut. So I think the world numbers in the corn and in the beans will start to, especially the corn, will start to come down after we get past the harvest. And that essentially the corn is playing a repetitive game, or the same type of game as the wheat was earlier this year.
Anything to add on the livestock before I let you go?
We saw the hog market come back nicely on the demand side. We also saw the cattle numbers in the slaughter figures drop substantially this week. So that'll be interesting to see if that becomes our trend and if we work through the biggest numbers of cattle as we head into the end of the summer.
Have a good weekend there in Kansas. Hey, what's the city look like, by the way?
It is very hilly. If you can picture a river town like on the Mississippi or on the Ohio, it's extremely hilly.
All right. Sounds like, what, Meridosha, maybe Illinois. I don't know whether you've been through there
or
not.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that right?
Exactly.
Oh, beautiful. Fantastic.
Okay,
enjoy
sir.
It. Hey, you too. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity and Analytics out in Atchison, Kansas. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report for a Friday afternoon.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Hey, have you visited our website lately? One of them, that is, willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. It'll show up on your smartphone. So will our mobile dedicated site. That one's m.willag.org. Don't put www in front of that one, just http://m.willag.org. And find all the programming that you hear on our radio stations posted there not long after it airs on our stations. Now, here's Dave Dickey. He has today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, a federal judge in Albuquerque is deciding today whether companies in New Mexico and Iowa can begin legally slaughtering horses for the first time in the country since it was effectively banned in 2006. A hearing is scheduled on a request by the Humane Society of the U.S. and others for a restraining order to block Valley Meat Company of Rosewell, New Mexico, and Responsible Transportation in Sigourney, Iowa, from opening their slaughterhouses as planned on Monday. After more than a year of delays and a lawsuit by Valley Meat, the Department of Agriculture in June gave Valley Meat the go-ahead to begin slaughtering horses. USDA officials said they were legally obligated to issue the permits, even though the Obama administration opposes horse slaughter and is seeking to reinstate the congressional ban. France's top administrative court on Thursday overturned a ban imposed last year by the French government on a type of genetically engineered corn produced by U.S.-based biotechnology firm Monsanto. The court upheld a decision made in 2011 when it said the French government had to abide by a directive approved by the European Commission in 1998 that authorized Monsanto's Mon810 corn. French Agriculture Minister Stéphane Le Foll and Environment Minister Philippe Martin issued a joint statement today saying they have ordered their staffs to build a case that is strong enough to justify the ban before the next sowing season starts in April. In an emailed statement, Monsanto said it is satisfied with the ruling. The International Grains Council says that world corn production during the 2013-14 crop year is forecast to hit 942 million metric tons, revising lower its previous forecast by 4 million tons due to dry weather in the U.S. Corn Belt. The IGC also said that it is revising its forecast for world wheat production by 4 million tons this month to 687 million tons, reflecting better prospects for the European crop than previously expected and a larger harvest out of India. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. That second program will post to our website by about 6 o'clock this evening, USA Central Time. Our guest this week, Steve Fried at ADM Investor Services in Chicago, Illinois. Up next, the latest findings on nitro genes, a group of genes identified as having the potential to help power more corn yield with less nitrogen. Agronomy Day on the University of Illinois South Farms in Urbana is always the third Thursday of August. This year, one of the four tours will include Professor of May's Functional Genomics, Steve Moose. He'll talk about nitro genes. And Moose says nine of them have been identified over the last 3 years. Each has been proven to affect traits involved in the corn plant's uptake and use of nitrogen. More importantly, these affect NUE, or nitrogen use efficiency, in corn. These genes showed an important impact on NUE-related traits, such as stover nitrogen content, grain nitrogen concentration, and kernel number. The ultimate goal of the research is to increase yields through better nitrogen utilization and lower nitrogen inputs. It's the holy grail of biotechnology if you can make nitrogen-fixing corn, says Steve Moose. And while breeders have tried to accomplish these results for some time, the geneticist says significant progress has not been made for a few reasons. First, when you're measuring yield, there are so many things that affect yield, and nitrogen is only one of them. Secondly, another problem is actually having environments where you can do evaluation and can separate the nitrogen from all the other factors. And finally, on top of that, third, add having the right genetics to put into the system to actually see where the differences are important. Moose and researchers at the Moose Functional Genomics Lab at the U of I reasoned combining or stacking these favorable nitro genes by a breeding approach could improve nitrogen utilization, grain yield, and possibly other agronomic traits. So they took germplasm that was very well studied not only by Illinois but by other researchers and evaluated it in an environment in which nitrogen is separated from other effects. When you do that, you discover that there are genes that have a small effect on NUE on their own. The project, of course, is putting those all together to see if it's possible to find a great big whopper effect, more of an effect combined than individually. You can learn more about the nitro genes at Agronomy Day this month. It starts at 7 a.m. and runs through the noon hour Thursday, the 15th day of August, on the South Farms just to the east and the south of the State Farm Center, the Assembly Hall, on St. Mary's Road. There are four Agronomy Day tours. Each lasts approximately an hour. The day is free. However, there is a cost for the noon lunch should you decide to purchase it. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Friday afternoon. Greg Johnson is on the phone line from the Andersons to take up the cash grain market with us today. Thanks, Greg, for taking the time with us. Tell me about basis in the area.
Well, basis levels have stopped going down after last week. We've seen them improve ever so slightly, but you know, you get a couple cents in the basis and you lose 10, 15 cents on the board. It's not a very good trade-off, but at least the basis isn't adding to the negativity.
And your expectations for next week?
Next week, it looks like there's still rain in the forecast in places. Not everyone's getting rain, especially that southwest quarter of Iowa, but enough areas are getting rain, and combine that with cooler temperatures. And really about the only thing we've got to hang our hat on is an early frost or a normal frost, and unfortunately we can't really talk about that with much certainty until the end of September. So we've got another 6 or 7 weeks to basically talk about crop prospects are, you know, not, I don't know if they're improving, but they're not getting dramatically worse every week like they did last year. So unless the USDA report on August 12th gives us something real friendly to hang our hat on, we're probably going to continue to grind sideways to lower for a while.
And your bids for the day?
Old crop corn tonight is 586. New corn is 454. Old beans are 1311. New beans 1169. And wheat is 640.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That is Greg Johnson. He's with the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Joins us on this Friday afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market in just a couple of minutes. I'll be back. We'll talk with the folks at T-Storm Weather in Chicago about the forecast.
It's National Ice Cream Sandwich Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1791, Samuel Briggs and his son, Samuel Briggs Jr., became the first father-son pair to receive a joint U.S. patent. Their invention was a nail-making machine. In 1861, the first U.S. national income tax was passed to aid the Union war effort. In 1880, the British Parliament adopted Greenwich Mean Time. GMT was originally set up to aid naval navigation, but it was not used on land until transportation improved. By the way, GMT was adopted by the U.S. on noon on November 18th of 1883, when telegraph lines transmitted time signals to all major cities. Before that, there were over 300 local times in the U.S. In 1887, Rowell Hodge received a patent for barbed wire. In 1956, the first new contract to build a section of the U.S. interstate highway system was awarded. It was for a portion of Route 66 in Missouri, which eventually became Interstate Highway 44. By the way, the Highway Aid Act of 1956 established a 90% federal funding level for national limited access highways. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Friday afternoon. On the phone line with us, Mike Tenora of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois, meteorologist and agricultural economist. He's also a University of Illinois graduate. Thanks, Mike, for being with us. Tell me about the weather forecast for the weekend, and then look forward into the week for the Midwest, please.
Well, we do have some good news for corn and soybeans, at least on the temperature side. We do have unseasonably cool weather that will generally dominate the Corn Belt over the next 5 to 10 days and more than likely all the way through the middle of the month. We don't see a whole lot of warm air on the horizon, so that's usually good because it often results in the highest corn and soybean yields when we have cool temperatures at this time of the year. Interestingly, July was also fairly cool. Since 1960, July will have ranked right around number 12 coolest across the key corn and soybean states of Illinois, Indiana, Iowa. However, there is one caveat to that, and that's that it actually ended up being very dry. It will have been the number 6 driest on record, at least since 1960. So that's kind of a negative to corn and soybeans. So what we're trying to figure out over here is how does all this weigh itself out? I mean, if you have a cool July and August, you usually end up with good yields. Too dry, you end up with low yields. So that brings us to the rainfall portion of the forecast. And as usual, that one is a little bit more tricky. We do have some rain taking place out in Iowa today that's benefiting some of the drier areas of western Iowa. But we'd really like to see higher coverage and amounts across a large portion of the Corn Belt. We have seen this dryness issue that developed around 4 weeks ago expanding coverage, and several areas would benefit from more rain. As we get into next week, it does look a little bit wetter from at least Monday through Wednesday, but the key there is a little bit. We don't think there's going to be a lot of large thunderstorm clusters, though there will be a few around. So with some luck, we'll see extra rain there, but more than likely, we won't see a whole lot. Then it turns unseasonably cool late next week and next weekend. That'll push the storm track a little bit further to the south. So the bottom line, Todd, is cool is good. We have that coming up. We would like to see some more rain, though.
It takes care of the crops in the Midwest in the United States. What about other parts of the planet? What do you see?
Well, the only other real interesting thing that's been taking place is out in Europe. We've seen a pretty significant heat wave over the last week in parts of Italy, Spain, and in France. That's not necessarily good for corn, but as you look into Southeast Europe, it really hasn't been very hot at all. And the hot wave or heat wave is breaking fairly quickly right now in France, and we've also seen good rain. So Europe could look a little bit better, but doesn't look all that bad at the moment either.
Thanks so much, Mike.
You're welcome.
Mike Tenora is with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Friday afternoon. Be sure to visit our website, by the way, at willag.org. You can hear Mike again there. And you can also hear our Commodity Week program. We'll record at 4:30 this afternoon. Our guest from ADM Investor Services in Chicago, Illinois this week, Steve Fried. Our panelists will include Ellen Dearden, Bill Mayer, and Dan Swicker. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what happened in the world of agriculture. You have a good weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for WILL comes from Bates Commodities, AgriGold, The Andersons, Wisconsin Plastic Drain and Tile, Strategic Farm Marketing, and Farm Credit Services. Thanks to these businesses for their support of WILL agricultural programs.